Kathy, thank you for joining me to talk with me about what you're doing, your practices and your upcoming book, your existing book. Let me just start by saying, you know, you are an executive coach, but you are also a blogger, a podcaster, an author. You are someone who is clearly making a big impact with your work and with your words. So I want to chat with you a little bit about how you got to this phase where you are now.
Oh, thank you for having me here, Anne. I appreciate it. All right. So let me start from the beginning. No, I won't go that far back. After my corporate life, you probably have read, it was 9/11 and I went through kind of a breakdown. I became a therapist and then a coach. And pretty soon into that journey, I thought, I've learned a lot in these 4 years or 5 years after my corporate life. I think I'd like to start writing. And that didn't emerge out of the blue. I was an English major. I wrote on the high school paper. I went to Boston University School of Public Communication. So, well, I started there and I hated journalism. Funny, I took one class in journalism. And I said, oh no, this what, when, where, why, forget it. Was an English major. So I loved books and I loved writing. I did. The interesting thing, though, is in my career, it morphed into a marketing career in publishing. So I didn't write. I didn't write creatively. I didn't write nonfiction. I wrote copy. Mm. But, you know, I was still doing some form of writing, and I did market research in my corporate life. So when I began to think, I think there's something here to talk about. What are these professional women's crises? How are they different from men's? Let me try to understand. I want to tell you that I wrote up a little proposal, and I went to see Janet Goldstein, who is a top editorial consultant, and she was a top editor in her day. And I'll never forget it. She said to me, we were in the Algonquin Hotel in New York, and she said, look, you're a fine writer, and if you needed more help, you know, you could get that, but I don't think this idea is the big idea you're really talking about. And I was crushed. I cried. And she said, what I think you need is more research. And I really didn't know what she meant. Like, I thought I was writing this book, Breakdown Breakthrough, about professional women's crises. I knew everything about that. But thank goodness I listened to her. And I did speak to 100 women I interviewed back then when we didn't have these ways. We didn't have Zoom, got on the phone and recorded and listened to 100 women's stories. And I want to say, that was such an important step to do research, to hone what you're talking about, to not just think you, in the nonfiction world now, I'm not talking memoir, sure. To really hone what you're talking about, to have kind of a model for change, that you're good, to really have substance in what you're sharing. And that became Breakdown Breakthrough. But in terms of even starting a blog, I had a website. And I thought, let me just try here. And I was scared to death to hit the publish button. I thought, who is going to care about what I have to say? And I'm such an imposter. I'm just like 4 years out of being miserable. What am I doing? But I kept doing it. And there's so many lessons, I think, in what I'm sharing. The fear, the imposter syndrome. But I kept doing it. And this was a pivotal moment, Anne. In the vein of, you know, being connected, not trying to do things by yourself, really being involved and engaged in organizations that are doing what you're trying to do, I was a member of 85 Broads, which was an amazing networking organization. It's now Elevate, which is still amazing.
Okay, yeah.
But they had a blog on Forbes, the 85 Broads blog, and they said to their members, hey, listen, we have a blog. If you want to submit pieces to us, we will kind of vet them and we'll choose the ones we like and we'll publish. And I went, and I, you know, immediately sent out one and they put it up and, you know, got a few views. But I think it was the second one I sent. And I'll never forget it. It was September 2011.
Oh.
And it got 80,000 views. And it was about, basically, it was a snarky look at, don't think LinkedIn is going to get you a job, meaning you have to get yourself. And it was snarky, but as I found in later years, the posts that just come flying out of me, like as if they're from someone else, They're the ones that go viral. They're the ones that really speak to people. So I got one sentence of an email from the Forbes woman editor, and she said, "Hello, would you like your own blog?"
Ah, that's amazing.
That's the start of it. You know, wow. Now I'm a senior contributor after all these years and 33 million views and, you know, that. So that was the start of it.
That's great. And there's so much just to surface really quickly from what you said, because you said there's meaty. First is the imposter syndrome, because that comes up in every conversation, certainly every conversation I have with a female author. Maybe I think everybody feels it. We just maybe might be more willing to say it. Again, not a syndrome. It's a totally normal state of mind that we all have when we're trying something that's stretching our boundaries a little bit.
Right.
But the second was that you asked for help. You were intentional. You were trying things. You were stretching, despite that fear, that sense of, you know. But third, which I think is a fundamental to your story, which is that this is all motivated out of a sense to help people, right? And you're doing posts that are trying to help people with their careers,
right?
With their, and that's seems to be your motivator. Right.
Yes. And, you know, I wish I could claim this. I read somewhere, turn your mess into a message. Huh. That is what I do. I got a lot of mess that I have cleaned up, that I've worked on, that I've overcome. And now that I do all this research, I see it's a universal problem for so many women, all of this mess that I've gone through. So, yeah, if I've always said, if I can help one woman bypass what I went through,
it's worth it.
It's a good day every day, you know?
Yep. Yeah, that's great. The other thing that's so interesting is the transformative situation of writing the book, because you had to dig deeper. You have to dig deeper to read. I like to think that writing is, in today's modern busy world, writing is a proxy for deep thought. It's when we give ourselves permission to do deep thought, to either let the ideas flow from our brain like it's from some other part, or to do the research and really analyze and work through to present something that's prepared. So
I love that. Can I riff on that for 1 second?
Please.
Now, all these years later, with this, my second book coming out, The Most Powerful You, here I am, a writer. I write at least 5 posts a month for Forbes and my own blog and everywhere else. Honest to goodness, I had the proposal. I knew the structure of the book, but once I got the deal, to sit down and make myself write it was physically one of the hardest things I've ever done.
Interesting.
It was torture.
Interesting.
I would procrastinate. Let's see, let me wash the floor. I think I got to do another load of laundry. I would find myself physically not sitting in the chair.
Wow.
And I realize now why I struggle in the beginning. When I don't really have the structure set up, I'm at a loss. It's hard for me.
Yep.
You're trying to start
in the middle. You're trying to start with the draft, and you're not.
So doing just one chapter, forcing myself through 7,000 words, then it all could flow more easily. But still not easy. I don't know. I'd love to hear what you think. When you think it's all up here, but then you have to put it on paper, what you realize is, what I have up here is not deep enough yet. It's not a chapter. It's 3 ideas.
Yep. We have this sort of illusion of fluency and knowledge and all of this. You know, there is the knowledge illusion. We think we know a whole bunch until we go to try to explain it. It's like, maybe I don't know as much as I thought.
That's right. That's 100% right, I think.
So let's talk about your upcoming book. What's your date, release date?
July 28th is the official pub date, but April 28th is the pre-order.
Oh, excellent.
Window.
Okay, good. So describe it to me, because just what little bit I've read, I'm excited.
Oh, thank you. So it again, it's called The Most Powerful You, 7 Bravery Boosting Paths to Career Bliss. And basically, what happened here is I've worked with thousands and thousands of women now in a lot of capacities. And what I wanted to do was pull the lens back a few years ago. And I wanted to understand, number one, what are these women, professional, mid to high level professional women, missing when they come to coaching that they just can't get on their own? Number two, what am I helping them get? what am I, if I had to distill it down to two words, and the words that came were bravery and power. Huh. So once I thought, all right, bravery and power, let me figure it out. I started honing every phone call, every Zoom call. Where is there missing bravery? Where is there missing power? And when you get bravery, how does that shape your power and change your life? And after watching and watching, and I used to be a market research person, so I think like that. I think like an outline, like, okay, here's this, 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 and this. What emerged were these seven damaging power gaps that professional women face that keep them from thriving in their work.
Wow.
And so, you know, what I've done in the book is presented a really riveting real life story of a woman who's had this gap, what it's done negatively and how she overcame it. But as we were talking about, books morph. And what it morphed into is I featured 30 plus national experts on everything you can think of, from communication, negotiation, networking. And so it's so not me. It's so much bigger than me. It's other people's stories, you know. But I do want to say, and I do think this is part of a nonfiction writer's job, I did do a quantitative survey as well. And so almost 1,000 women have taken it, and 98% in have at least one of these gaps.
Fascinating.
And over 75% have three or more of these gaps at the same time.
Wow. Wow.
So it's all about how do we become, I'd just love to say this if I could, the flip side of it, of the gap is bravery. So there are seven ways: brave sight, brave speak, brave ask, brave connect, brave challenge, brave service, and brave healing. And that's what you get from the book.
Oh, wow. That sounds terrific. That sounds terrific. And very timely.
So timely, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're sitting here doing this interview now during a time of everybody being shut in from a pandemic, so it's hard to think what this is our chance to re-envision some future.
That's right.
Opportunities and a future, what we want to be doing with our future things, and really assess: am I doing something meaningful? And so I think this book, it landed at just a perfect time.
Thank you for that. I hope so. I hope it's helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk briefly. I know that, you know, to get to this point, you and I chat a little bit before we started recording about how you get to a point of authority, how you get to doing this work. Clearly you built this book, not only on a huge body of research, but also on the experiences of your working with people over many years. And you had a quote, I don't have it right in front of me, about the struggle is part of the process, in an interview you did on your website. Let's talk a little bit about how you would advise somebody who is trying to herself build an area of expertise and to get to a point of having some power and authority. Obviously, you've got a book on it, so I'm not asking you to have to.
I get it. I love it. So, you know, I'm realizing, I remember I did a webinar with Jason Miller, who was the co-founder of a great marketing agency, Peaceful Media. And we did it on, he called it, he's funny, and I can link to it wherever you share this if you want. But it was, you know, how to not be just a wannabe thought leader, but how to really be a thought leader. Mm-hmm. And it was based on a post I wrote about the 10 questions to ask yourself if you are really ready to be a true thought leader. And we were joking about it. I don't really love that. I mean, I use that term not for myself. You know, I am a thought leader. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. I have a problem with that term.
Yep.
I see it as you lead with your thought. You are on the cutting edge, on the frontier of thinking. I mean, that's right. How I see it. But I think we banter it around, that term, an awful lot. So let's talk, right?
Yes, we do. Please, let's talk about thought leadership, because yes.
Yeah, and so I'd rather talk about it as, well, this is what I see, and I wish I had those 10 questions in front of me, but you've got to ask yourself, number one, why are you writing? And what are you trying to get out of it? And, you know, I'll never forget, there's one individual, nameless, who teaches people to build their mailing lists. And years ago, she told one of my colleagues, he went to one of her courses, just write a book. It doesn't matter what you say. It doesn't matter how good it is. Just write it. I just want to throw up in my mouth.
I know.
I mean, for those of us who take it so seriously and that we agonize over every word, that it's what we really, oh my goodness. So I want to ask people to think, are you really just trying to get money? Are you trying to get your client based? Are you trying to get your business to sell? Forget it. Because it's very transparent. We can see it. We can see that there's nothing here.
Yeah.
There's nothing here for me to read. Number one, why are you doing it? Number two, I think that there are some minds that are so brilliant. They're minds for our time. I don't have one of those. My mind is I can think critically and analyze critically what I'm seeing and turn it into a model for change. I can turn it into a methodology. I can turn it into, that's my maybe superpower.
Yeah.
But what is yours? What is it that you're offering? If it's just your musings, I think that you have to rethink.
Yeah.
I think your musings don't necessarily, and this is what the Janet Goldstein basically said, look, I don't think this is a big enough idea.
Yeah.
And we all want to think we've got the next best screenplay or book, but we all don't. So part of it is, have you gone outside yourself? Have you done research? And research is easy to do at this point now. We can use SurveyMonkey. We can, do a Zoom call. Have you gone beyond your boundaries of what you think? I think the best writers don't just come from what they think.
Yeah.
They've amassed a lot of information. What else? What else do I think? I look back at my first blog, my first year of it. I was pretty terrible.
Very
long, rambling, no headline, no headers. You also, I think, have to understand how people digest content. I mean, I will share. I'm an extrovert. I talk too much. I give too much. And, everybody has said, tone that back. I mean, it's just too much. I can't, So even this book, it's like a good movie that gets edited. We all need good editors. You've heard this a million times, and you, I'm sure, teach it, kill your darlings, kill your babies. That one chapter, I have a chapter that's cut out of the book, two chapters.
Yep.
No, I'm like, no, it's so essential. No, it isn't. And once I cut it out, I didn't even miss it.
But
nothing's wasted. I'll use that chapter another way.
I like to put, I have a file called, things that need a new home. So the things that I cut are just these little homeless chapters, right?
It's like they're looking fine. It's not wasted.
They'll be adopted somewhere. That's not the book.
That's it. But so those are just some tips about how to refine your writing. But can I talk for a minute about how you build a following?
Yes, please do. Please do.
So when I look at the things that I've written that have over 1 million views, like one on LinkedIn that had got so much attention, they sent a film crew here when they were just starting out their platform. Now everyone can write, 580 million people. But in the beginning, it was only a few. That one was 6 toxic behaviors, how to recognize them in yourself and change them. And that one came flying out of me in 20 minutes. And I put it up on LinkedIn thinking, who is going to read this? And no one's going to want to say they're toxic. And it was overwhelming. I got, 1,000 comments. And they were saying, oh my goodness, I am toxic. I see from your article that I am toxic.
Wow.
I mean, it was a movement. But why did things go viral? I think number one, you're speaking truth in a way that isn't varnished and prettied up. You're revealing yourself. Yeah. You're not afraid to show the warts. Number two, you're saying it in a way that inspires people to do something.
Yeah.
Now, how do we do that? I think maybe there's some empathy in the writing. There's, you might be presenting hard stuff like, hey, people, you're toxic. But you say it in a way that they can hear it. I think empathy is crucial. Empathy is crucial. Absolutely. That you are not talking down to them. You are not talking like the expert. You are just right there with them realizing you're toxic or whatever it is you're talking about. What else? It's got to be engaging. Maybe some humor. Maybe you understand how to balance also information with reveal.
Yeah.
Even in... when I'm doing a Forbes interview, it's all about what the person is saying. But the first two paragraphs are usually a reveal of some sort, that I am so excited to talk to this person about whatever it is because I struggled. or yeah. still struggle with this. So I think as revealing as you can be while realizing that, you know, in therapy, when I was a therapist, I learned, be careful what you share. Make sure that everything you share is for their benefit, not for your benefit.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that writers do get great benefit out of their own work. But if we're sharing something because we're angry about something and it comes across in such an unbalanced way, you're just going to push people away.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. There's a difference between, so you could have an article about toxic behaviors that is a rant.
Right.
And the rant might get a lot of clicks because people just kind of want to pile onto that, but it's not really going to do anything. Or you can do something that, like you said, inspires action. It is actually a constructive take on it. And you let yourself be a little bit vulnerable, but that doesn't erode your authority. In fact, in that situation, it adds to your authority by saying...
That's a really good point.
Yeah. I experience. Because the whole idea, people get caught up... Okay, when they want to be a thought leader, they're focused on the leader and not the thoughts, you know, focused on how they look, right? It's like, I'm a thought leader now, I look awesome, you know, and so then they try to write like what they think a thought leader writes like, and then it's all downhill from there.
Oh, you're funny. But I would love you to talk more about, you don't want to reveal so much that you erode your credibility.
Yeah.
Tell me more about that, because in writing this book, I wanted one chapter to be fully my story about mistreatment, which is pretty rough.
Yeah.
But it did, in the end, I think, erode some of the credibility.
Yeah. So I think, you know, it's tough. I think you want to show up human. And in fact, people are more receptive to difficult ideas if you show up human as opposed to expert, right? If you
right.
There's this whole thing, the pratfall effect, you know, people who are more likable if they, you know, spill coffee on themselves, and then they're great quiz. There's some research on this. It's just a fabulous thing. So if you let yourself be human, but you want those human pieces to be in an area that doesn't erode your own credibility. So it's like, I can spill coffee on myself. That doesn't affect my knowledge about writing. Right.
It's a balance that
it's a balance.
And you know, I also noticed this one chapter that's been very reworked on acquiescing instead of saying stop to mistreatment. I think that we do, even if we're angry still, there has to be some emotional balance in what we're writing.
Yeah.
We can write the deepest, most harrowing stuff, but if we're still unhinged from it, if we're still sounding very wounded from it, that's what people hear, not the message you're trying to communicate.
Right. There's writing, you know, you write in your journal, you construct a new narrative, you do that for yourself. When you're publishing for the world, you're not writing for yourself, you're writing for the reader. And so you have to approach it differently. You have to, you know, step out of that space. So go ahead and first do that inner writing. First do that stuff. There's enormous value in that. And there's enormous healing in that, constructing a new narrative. But that doesn't belong in your book.
Right. You know? And I think that, you know, we're saying this, but it was something I really just learned in having written a full chapter of my story, which I've never done. I've done a short blog post with my story. So people, if you're listening, you might say, I think I understand what they mean, but you kind of can't understand it till you're doing it.
Yeah.
It may seem fine to you, and then someone reads it and says, wow, you sound really unhinged or angry still. One person who was a panel reader had said, now all of this has been revised, of course, you sound like you're wanting your day in court. And they didn't want that. You know, that's not helpful to them.
Yep. Yep. Memoirists, I think, really need to watch for this. I mean, because how often have you read a memoir? It's like, ooh, here comes the self-justification.
Memoir is hard.
Memoir is hard. I'm
not there. I'm not there yet.
No. But that's so interesting. And it's true. You can hear this, but it's not until you're actually engaged in the process and then you realize. And you may have said, I felt totally even keeled when I wrote this.
I did. That's the crazy thing.
But words don't have, you know, people, all they have is the words. So they're going to project their image of how you feel on it. So perhaps you even have moved past it, but based on the story you're telling, people are creating a story and an image of what you are. And what you
Yes.
Think.
Oh, that's so right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so fun. Right. Oh, well, this has been a great conversation, Kathy. Thank you so much.
I hope you find it, everyone finds it helpful.
I think people will. You've got a great story.
Thank you. Can I say that it's a beautiful journey to write, but it's work. It isn't going to the movies. It isn't eating popcorn. It isn't, you know, a swim in the ocean. It's work.
Yeah.
And if you are scared to put that work into it or that seems too hard, I'd ask you to think again, because the world needs our messages, but they need them refined.
Yeah.
Not just a regurgitation of raw thought.
Yep.
I think.
Yep. Yep. Raw thought or the easiest top things you have in your head about a topic, you know.
Right.
If you want to make an impact, you have to work a little.
That's it.
A little more. Thank you.
Thank you for talking today, Anne.